Welcome, dear listeners, to a world that lies beyond the realm of the ordinary, where the mysterious and the unexplained converge. Prepare yourselves for an audio journey that will send shivers down your spine and make your heart race. Welcome to Chillers and Thrillers, the paranormal podcast that delves into the darkest corners of the unknown and where the shadows hold secrets. Hello and welcome back to Chillers and Thrillers, the paranormal podcast where I read true stories of people's encounters with the strange and unexplained. No comedy, gore, skepticism, or true crime, only 100% true spooky tales. Before we start the podcast, I wanted to thank listener JJRob32 who left me an awesome review in the App Store. You made my week. If you'd like to support the podcast, please share with your paranormally inclined friends and family, leave a rating or review in your preferred podcast subscriber, or follow the podcast YouTube channel and leave a comment there. My dad is a custodian. Shout out to my dad as well because he's an awesome dad. And when I was a kid, he was the head custodian for a private school, which meant that sometimes my sisters and I would get to hang out in the school after hours if my dad was paged or had to lock up after an event. Now I can say firsthand, one of the creepiest places you can be is in a school at night. Walking down a dark hallway with dim lighting, not knowing what was behind the doors or around the corners. What is it about schools that are just creepy? Is it the unnatural feeling of a place that is usually full of energy and busy being completely empty? Based on what we know about the supernatural, it is credible that schools could be haunted. Just the concentration of energy from children and people in it is enough to be feasible to have a pull for the supernatural. But we also think of high stress and tension in the area. University students staying up late to cram for a final exam, teenagers stressed and overflowing with hormones, and of course, unfortunate accidents and incidences. In tonight's episode, we're going to take a walk down the dark hallways of haunted schools. So turn down the lights, get comfortable, and listen in. The Sinking Voice, submitted by user Monkey Navigated. Freshman year of college, I was visiting my friend Catherine at UGA. She lived in Brumby at the time, a girl's dorm. Being underage, we spent our nights smoking and goofing off in her room with her next-door neighbor and another girl, Danielle, who went to high school with Catherine and I. The night was typical until Catherine's roommate joined us. She had just come back from the shower. I was pretty sure they were communal, one for each floor, and said, "You guys have to come with me. There's a girl singing in the showers, and she has the most beautiful voice." Having nothing else to do, we obliged. And just as she said, there was the most lovely singing voice coming from the showers. The shower curtains were such that they could not be closed even if pulled tightly as possible. There was always an inch or so uncovered on either side. They were almost always see-through and also quite short, so you were going to see at least ankles if someone was in there. There were also no speakers or ventilation systems to be seen except for the drains in the floor. The point of all this detail is to tell you that although there was a single shower going with the curtain closed, there was no one in the shower stall or any of the other stalls. We looked and looked, and all the while this girl is singing beautifully, the voice reverberating from that one shower. Upon this realization, all of us looked at each other, utterly spooked. A moment later, Danielle darted out of the bathroom as fast as a champion sprinter. The rest of us followed her a few seconds later. Upon reaching the dorm, we found Danielle sitting on the bed, shaking, with an ashtray in front of her. "That was Tracy's voice," she said. "She's been following me around. I saw her at the creek the other day just for a second, but I swear that was her voice." Tracy was in her junior high school class with us, and she had died in an accident the summer before our senior year. Before I get started with our next story, I wanted to thank the submitter, user One Aspiring Pilot. They were also kind enough to share me the ghost video that they referred to in their story, and the newspaper article about the event that took place at the school. If you're interested in seeing those, check out the YouTube channel or the Instagram page for the podcast, and I'll be posting them there. Thank you again, One Aspiring Pilot. I really appreciate you letting me share your story and for sending me the materials. The Library, submitted by One Aspiring Pilot. The high school I worked at was haunted. Like some of the other custodians and teachers I worked with saw and experienced paranormal things, like shadow figures, doors opening by themselves, things falling over, and a ghost was even caught on camera. One day in the summer, we were talking about how the school was haunted, and I, being the stupid person that I am, challenged the ghost to show itself to me if it existed. A few hours later, I was deep cleaning the library alone with my coworkers, while my coworkers were getting us all sodas. And that's when I had my first ghost experience. It was mostly a vibe, a feeling. I get a feeling that I'm being watched. So I turned around, expecting to see somebody. There's nobody there. Something felt off, so I kept on looking around. Then, I had this feeling like something was running towards me. I was getting some serious intuition to get the heck out of that library, but I was too scared to actually move. I'm going to sound crazy for this part, but for some reason, I could just tell whatever this was ran behind the bookshelf and was making its way towards me. I turned to my left, and boom, whatever it is, was right next to me. That's when I got this feeling like it lunged at me, and I heard a noise like someone exhaling out of their mouth. After that, I ran out and waited for my coworkers, who were supposed to help me clean the library, to come back. To make things even better, a few months later, I learned that there had been a fire in that library that killed two janitors in 1972. That was the only time something like that has ever happened to me, and working at that school never felt right again. Room 107, submitted by user Elizabetha. For the first year of college, my best friend and I shared a dorm room together. A few months in, her cell phone started receiving missed calls from the same number a few times a week. She never answered, and it never left a message. Once this was going on for a few weeks, we realized that it always called when she and I were together outside of the dorm room, which we thought was a strange coincidence. One day, I was locked out of our room and sat outside the door, waiting for her to return from the grocery store. While I was sitting there, I heard her cell phone ringing inside. When she got back, I mentioned that someone had called her. She checked, and it was the same number as usual. We were both fed up at this point, so she decided to call it back. Once she dialed, our dorm phone in our room started ringing. Our dorm phone, which we had never used before, had been calling her phone for weeks. Always when we were together out of our room. We immediately unplugged the phone. A few weeks after that, she told me that she was experiencing strange things in her sleep. She said that it would often feel like someone was pouring hot water all over her body and felt as if someone was crawling on top of her and pinning her down. During this time, she felt awake, but couldn't cry out. She started to talk about feeling this more and more often, and we both were getting a little freaked out. One day, I was sitting at my desk doing homework, and she was napping, and all of a sudden, she shot up in bed, screaming my name. I was terrified. She said that she had been trying to scream my name, but it felt like someone was on top of her, holding their hands over her mouth. Finally, one night, I started to experience the same sensations. I woke up in the middle of the night because it felt like something warm had just been poured over my body. I tried to sit up, but couldn't. I tried to say something, but couldn't. Then, it felt like someone was crawling on top of me and pressing their hands down on my shoulders, pinning me down. I kept pushing back against it and was finally able to sit up in bed and shout out. This started happening more and more to us, to where it got to the point where we would take turns sleeping while someone stayed awake with the lights on. I can't stress enough how terrifying this became. We even went to the head of our dorm and asked to move rooms, but there weren't any available. Then one night, a few months in, we were both in the room watching TV, and suddenly, all at the same time, the TV turned into static, the dorm phone, which was still unplugged, and my roommate's phone started ringing, and her shutters started rapidly opening and closing. We both screamed and ran outside. Thankfully, we had friends in the dorm who let us sleep on their floor that night. The final event happened one night when we were both sleeping. I woke up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. Now, to be clear, every time I tell this part of the story, someone assumes I was half asleep. But I was not. I was fully awake. At that time, my roommate worked at a Thai restaurant, and they had a specific outfit to wear. Red shirt, black pants, black apron. Anyways, while I'm in the bathroom, I heard someone else come in. I peeked through the crack in the door and saw the back of my roommate standing in front of the mirror, wearing her restaurant outfit, and moving her hands as if she was putting moisturizer on her face or something. I started to wonder what in the world she was doing, so I opened the stall door and asked her. She slowly turned her head, stared straight at me, then ran out of the bathroom. It all really happened before I could fully comprehend, but as soon as she ran out of the bathroom, all the lights turned off. The lights in the bathroom, the lights in the hallway, everything. I was so terrified, I quickly ran back to our room and burst into the room, screaming my roommate's name. She sat up sleepily in bed, in her pajamas. It was the scariest thing that had ever happened to me. We moved out to our own apartment soon after that, but 2 years later, I received an email from the head of the dorm we had originally talked to. She said that she had never been able to forget what we would tell her, so she had looked into it and found out that someone had died in our dorm over 10 years ago by jumping out the window. Also, when I was retelling our story to a group of friends a few years later, one of them stopped and said, "Wait, are you talking about room 107? Apparently, his cousin had stayed in there the past year and moved out because she claimed it to be haunted. I know this sounds like a script to a movie or something, but it really happened exactly how I described. It was the most terrifying year, and every time I talk about it, I break out into goosebumps. I told you not to do that. Submitted by user Laura. As an undergraduate, I attended Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. The town developed around the 108-year-old campus, which had earned the nickname of Harvard on the Hawking because of its beautiful period red brick buildings. Due to its age, the university was bound to have some lore attached to it. However, I feel that it is important to mention that Athens has a darker past than most cities. Not only has the university reclaimed a former insane asylum and tuberculosis ward as part of the campus, but the city itself falls in the middle of a pentagram of cemeteries, many of which contain the bodies of former asylum patients. During my first year living on campus, I was housed in a single dorm room within one of the older residence halls on East Green. It was always a bit stuffy in that room, and the window frequently refused to open. Most nights I lived with it, simply choosing to sleep over my comforter and sweat through my pajamas. Like many dorm rooms, the walls of my single unit were painted an institutional off-white color, which really got me down. I chose to hang posters on the walls, but it seemed as though the walls repelled them. Every day for several weeks after I had hung my posters, I would return home to find them lying on the ground beneath the wall where they once were. I figured that the problem was most likely due to the lack of tack on the tape that I was using, and promptly purchased some very strong duct tape from the local hardware store. I covered nearly the entire backsides of my posters with a tape, hoping that they might stick to the walls once and for all. As most residence hall staff will tell you, duct tapes on the walls is not looked upon kindly. It has a tendency to remove paint from the wall and sometimes even the sheetrock. I didn't care. For a good 3 days, not a single poster fell. On the third night, I fell asleep on top of my blankets, as was usual. I drifted to sleep and began to dream. What the dream was about is now irrelevant, but I do have a vague recollection that it was pleasant. After some time, my dream was abruptly interrupted, both visually and audibly. The pleasant scene cut to black for a few seconds, almost like at the end of a movie. Then, I heard a woman's stern voice. "I told you not to do that," she said calmly but firmly. The air in the room had turned heavy and cold. My eyes flew open, and I watched as the poster on the right wall of my room was torn from its place on the wall and thrown across the room beneath my desk. I should emphasize that it was indeed thrown. It did not glide or float, as paper often does when you drop it. This was a forceful and deliberate throwing motion. I couldn't believe what I was witnessing. Like any normal 18-year-old girl living by herself when she encounters a member of the spirit world, I hid under my covers until I exhausted myself from fear. Many people are not fortunate enough to know the identity of their spiritual roommates. I, on the other hand, was very well informed about mine. It is said that the residence hall where I lived that year was haunted by the former dorm marm, a mix between a sorority mother and a groundskeeper. This particular woman was said to have lived in the building when it was an all-girls dorm many years before my time. I'm not the only one to have encountered her, but I am most certainly the only student to have had her enter their dreams and intimidate them. Needless to say, I took the posters down, and I have a feeling that the spirit who contacted me was displeased with my choice in poster adhesive. I don't blame her. Sophomore year, submitted by user Rocket Sparkle. For some context, I am recounting an experience that I had about 8 years ago when I was a sophomore in college in Westchester, Pennsylvania. I am recounting it to the best of my abilities, but some details might have been lost due to the time passing and the fact that I try not to think about this all too often. Part 1, The Nightmares. Sophomore year started out fine. I had good friends and kept my old room on the 8th floor. I had a roommate who spent more time out at her boyfriend's house than in my room, so I got our lovely 12x12 to myself. I had a boyfriend for almost a year, and things were going pretty rad. So it was odd that I started having incredibly violent, brutal nightmares out of nowhere. The first nightmare I remember most. It was as if I was in my town, and the whole place was full of people drinking and partying. Not out of the ordinary for a college town, but I got the immediate sense that something was wrong. As I started walking up a hill in town, I noticed that everything was disgusting or rotting. The once beautiful mansions that bordered our schools looked abandoned, but people were still inside yelling and laughing. As I neared the top, I looked up and noticed my father on a balcony. I tried to call for him, but he didn't hear me. I rushed inside, but he wasn't there when I got upstairs. All of a sudden, I can hear screaming and smell burning. I'm running through the house trying to get out, calling my father's name. Just as I'm about to give up on finding him, I see him bathed in fire. I wake up sweating, tears streaming down my face at 3 a.m. I can remember that the idea of going back to sleep seemed impossible that night, so I turned on a movie and somewhere around dawn fell asleep. The next day I called my dad. It's not like I was worried or anything, but it was nice to hear his voice, and we both shrugged off the dream as my general fear that I would lose my parents. It's a common fear, especially on your own in college. I didn't think much of it, well until I started having some more dreams. Every single night, for the next month, a new person was featured in a dream, each more gruesome than the last. My mother being attacked, my friends passing in car accidents I caused, or things I felt I could stop if only I could get there in time. Every single person who meant anything to me at all found themselves slaughtered in my nightmares, each worse than the last. To make it worse, the dreams started compiling onto each other. Now, if I woke up at one from a nightmare, if I went back to sleep, the dream would either pick up where it left off, or I'd start a fresh new nightmare to wake me up at 3 and 5 a.m. I was only safe to nap during the day, and really only for 20 minutes at a time. I got weaker. I could barely eat. I was so tired. Classes were impossible to follow. 18 credits, and I was managing to fail everything for my inability to keep it together. This was my own personal hell. I even went to a school psychologist to see if she could figure out why the dreams were happening. She thought it was stress, but wondered if I would want to see a psychiatrist or take sleeping pills. I was too afraid of what might happen if I couldn't wake up from my dreams. What would happen if I could confront the thing murdering my mother in my dreams? I didn't want to know. Part 2. The Night of the Thing. It didn't really seem like a different night to me. It was late and I was sitting, just watching TV as usual, well past 2 in the morning. I'd gotten into a pattern of 20-minute catnaps between classes and just staying awake at night. This night, some uncut Comedy Central special had turned into an advertisement. Sitting on my laptop, at first I hadn't even noticed that the screen started graying and flickering. I hopped out of bed and adjusted the cables on the TV, thinking it was just a connection problem. At this point, the idea of paranormal hadn't even crossed my mind. Ghosts were fun things to laugh about with friends. Demons were the boogeyman of my Catholic upbringing. I fixed the cables and got back in bed. Again, the screen switched from color to gray and began flickering. I changed the channel and it was still full of static. I turned the TV off and looked back at the game I was playing. This time, the TV turned back on. Convinced I had nudged the remote, I turned it off again. Immediately, it turned back on. Thinking it was a remote control issue, I took the batteries out of the remote and pushed the TV off button. As I sat back in bed, it turned itself on again. At this point, I was creeped out, but not prepared for what happened as I turned my eyes to the right. My roommate had a poster on her side of the room, two frat guys carrying one drunk friend home with the words teamwork above them. As I looked at her wall, it was as if the poster was changing in front of my eyes. They were no longer drunk, and they were coming towards me, faces distorting every second. Convinced my eyes were playing tricks on me, I removed my glasses and wiped my eyes. Looking again, the rest of the poster had transformed itself into the same kind of thing as my nightmares. I decided not to look and I turned away and tucked myself into my bed as best as I could. That was the moment the lights in my room turned off. I remember distinctly that this was also the moment that clicked into my brain. Be afraid. I could see the light in the hallway and realized that this was just in my room. There was still a little light from the TV too, and suddenly the room was pitch black. Something that shouldn't have happened considering there were lights outside all of our buildings. My tired mind went to the last prayer I could remember. Saint Michael, Archangel, defend us in the hour of battle. Protect us against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray, and our Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God, thrust down to hell Satan and with him the other wicked spirits who wander through the world for the ruins of souls. Amen. I said it a few times, I can't remember how many, but after some time, I became aware of a presence in the room. I can't say it was anything but a dark presence that blocked out all of the light in the room. The TV static seemed gone, the light from the hallway that peeked under the dorm door, gone. It was a darkness I had not ever come close to recreating in my own life. I couldn't see my hands or make out any shapes in this blackness. And I could feel it breathing on me. A heavy, belabored, loud breathing that was hot on my neck. I could feel the sprinkles of spit touching my shoulders, and I was paralyzed. Afraid to look because I knew in my head and my heart, if I looked this thing in the face, it would take me. I couldn't even turn around. I reached next to myself, picked up my phone, and dialed the first person who came to mind. My very religious friend Jennifer, an RA in my building. It wasn't until she picked up that I realized I was crying. I tried my best to explain to her that there was something in my room and it was going to hurt me. And she somehow understood that this was paranormal and not a public security issue. She simply said, "Give me 5 minutes." And I could hear her going through the keys at the front desk to get to my room. I wish I could explain the thing in my bedroom better, but just understand that I remember the hotness of its breath and the awful sound it made just standing there, and I could feel hatred, just the hate that it had for me. Like when you feel someone staring at you in a crowd, and you look, and it's your enemy shooting daggers with their eyes. It was like this, but worse. I knew whatever it was wanted me and hated me, and I just needed to not engage it for as long as I could. As I heard the keys turn into the lock and the door open, the lights went back up, the TV blasting infomercials again, and the thing, gone. Jen had arrived with a Bible and a bottle of holy oil her mother had given her. She sat with me, and I told her all of what had been going on for the last month. She stayed with me until I fell asleep. When I woke up in the morning, she was asleep in my roommate's bed. That morning, we took time to bless the room, and I spent the rest of the day finally sleeping for the first time in 4 weeks, with no nightmares. I can't really tell you what's real or not here, but it felt real to me. Since then, I've read books that state that demonic possession happens after an emotional and physical assault meant to wear the victim down. I've also read books saying that sleep deprivation can make a person see and feel things that are not there. What I do know is that this experience changed my life and stayed with me. I was 22 before I slept with the lights off in my bedroom. Even now, when I move into a new apartment, I bring sage and holy water and say a few prayers, hoping they'll be enough to keep me protected. I figure it's better to just not take any chances. The Haunted Elementary School, my 69 virus. Last January, I was between jobs and had just recently had a daughter who was about 5 months old at the time. My husband had been working through my pregnancy, but had lost his job. We were living at my mom's house, and I have an education in psychology and some experience as a counselor, so I was looking for the best I could get. The best I could find right away was a job working as a paraprofessional in the special education department of an elementary school in a nearby suburb. The position was unique due to the pandemic, being that they needed someone just to sit around in the computer room while the kids did speech therapy over Zoom. My job was just to walk around the school back and forth between classrooms and the computer room, picking up kids, taking them to the Zoom room, sitting there for 30 minutes to an hour, and then taking them back, picking up the next batch, and so on. Some days of the week were scheduled tightly, and other days of the week I routinely had just 2 appointments. The school was a huge horseshoe housing 700 elementary school students. I was located all the way at the far back of one side in the pre-K wing. It could take 15 minutes to walk all the way across the building and back when the kids I was picking up were in the older grades. Every day, I would make this walk. In the middle of the school, across from the front office, I would always notice and try to ignore this strange rag doll with construction paper over its face, showcased in a display case. No bad vibes from it, but it just seemed out of place and random. It was there the entire 5 months I worked there, never changing or having anything added to the case. The doors in the school use a key to lock from both the inside and outside. The doors do not lock automatically. You absolutely 100% have to manually lock them with a key. We are technically supposed to lock rooms when we leave them empty throughout the day, but no one ever really did. So I just left my door unlocked when I went to get the kids. I would go to get a kid in pre-K, so there'd be literally two classrooms away, less than a minute to pick them up and walk back. My door would be locked by the time I returned. Sometimes I'd be gone longer, but sometimes that's all it would take, 60 seconds. I messed around with the store in my free time, trying to figure out how it was locking. And the only conclusion I could come up with was that someone was manually locking it when I was gone. I asked the janitor that was always around, and he said no. I asked if it could lock itself, and he said no. So I came to the conclusion that someone was messing with me, trying to teach me a lesson for not locking my door or something passive-aggressively. So I texted my boss, the vice principal, and asked her to come talk to me when she had time. I explained the situation to her, and she said she was sure no one could do something like that. She would have maintenance look at the door, and that was the end of it. I come back after the weekend, and the door is broken, like off-kilter on the hinges, so it just wouldn't shut all the way at all. I guess locking on its own won't be the problem anymore. The school did have security cameras in the hall, and I wondered if there had any video of me pushing the doorknob down to check that it had locked before walking off, returning, and it being locked. After that, there was a day where I went to pick up a kid out of his classroom in the pre-K wing by my office. But they switched the schedule up that day, so the class wasn't in there. I shrugged it off and went to pick up the other kid that also sat in there for his block, and then came back. There was another paraprofessional watching her own kid in the playroom nearby, so I asked her if she knew where the other class might have been. She said she didn't know, but that she thought she'd seen a kid run in there. Might have been going to use the bathroom. I said thank you, went back to the empty classroom. I have the other little kid with me at this point. There is a bathroom in the back of the class, but it's open. I walk over there, confused, check the room, even look around the door, and there's no kid. I shrugged my shoulders at the little kid I had with me and began walking towards the exit of the room. The bathroom door slams shut behind me. The little kid I had with me jumped out of his skin, but I tried to remain calm. The other paraprofessional nearby sees us out in the hallway peering into the empty classroom, presumably looking puzzled and freaked out. She asked if the kid was in there, and I said, no, but the door slammed behind me when I was walking out. I trailed off, looking down at the kiddo with me, who was looking back up at me with his eyes wide as ever. Probably just the wind, I say. The other paraprofessional kind of looks at me crazy, but shrugs it off and keeps about her business. The kid I was with whispers, it was a ghost. And of course I have to be the adult and say, no, I'm sure it was just because I messed with the door. I blow off the incident, a couple of weeks pass by, and I'm in the empty computer room working on art for the walls. It's Wednesday, so it's an early day for pre-K, and all the littles have gone home with the real teachers, while the real teachers are in a staff meeting. Someone knocks at my office door. Mind you, the door no longer shuts all the way, so I figure they didn't want to barge in. I get up from my desk 5 feet away and open the door. No one is there. I look down the hallway. No one's there. I sit back down, more annoyed than anything, and it happens again. At this point, I'm kind of fed up. I do practice witchcraft and have been doing so seriously for more than 16 years, but I have no mediumship abilities or anything like that. I don't deal with ghosts and spirits in my practice, but that's the reason I'm not scared at this point. I ask the janitor if the place is haunted. This guy doesn't skip a beat and says, "Oh yeah, Rodney." "Rodney?" I ask. "Yeah, they say a little boy died here. They named the doll across the office after him." "What the heck?" I ask my supervisor about it, and she says, "Oh yeah, they told you about Rodney, huh?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, that could have been in your ad." At this point, I've become acquaintances with the school librarian, and I ask her what's going on as well. She says all kinds of people have had weird experiences. Night janitors have had their things moved on their own. One time, the principal had an alarm go off showing someone was down the basement at 3 a.m., but none of the outside doors had gone off and no one was on video in the school at the time. Another time, over spring break, Rodney the doll across from the office got ripped up in his display case, his head laying on the ground, which is why he has construction paper over him now. No one on camera, nothing on the camera of the doll. Another staff member who never believed in ghosts until she saw a little boy run into a classroom and disappear. That's about the extent of the things that happened to me there, but I became fascinated. Some staff knew of the ghost, some had never heard anything about it. Mostly, staff who worked on my side of the building had experiences. The other side of the building seemed like a whole other world. Totally normal, no occurrences there. I became the weird ghost girl, I'm sure, always asking people if they'd seen anything. I'm not the person to pretend like there's nothing going on so as not to stir the pot. Of course, I never let the kiddos near me hear, and no one other than the janitor seemed to have heard of anyone dying at the school. But people who had heard of the ghost or had experiences did have theories. One day, I asked a paraprofessional from another school in the district, because at the meeting she mentioned she herself attended the elementary school where I worked. She didn't know anything about a ghost, but she did say that while she attended, a boy died at the school, in the wing where I worked. She could corroborate the story and had been very sad. She said that they hung a drawing of his up in the hallway to commemorate him. Sure enough, among the plaques, there is a framed photo of a swimming hole and a mountain in memory of Ernie, not Rodney. I found a much better job and quit during summer vacation. But I did tell Ernie, in the silence of the computer room in the last week of school, that if he wanted, he could cross over, and he didn't have to be stuck at the school. I even had a sacred place out in the country where I believe the veil is thin, and that he's welcome to come with me there. Like I said, no psychic abilities here, but I did drive out there on the last day and put down a birdhouse for Ernie. I hope he's doing well. And that's all for this episode. I hope you enjoyed these, and as always, I would love to hear your own experiences. I did ask my dad if he ever worked at a haunted school, and he said luckily he did not. So please feel free to share them with me. You can comment on this video in the YouTube channel, or you can email me directly at chillersandthrillers@gmail.com. And until next time, I hope all of you ghouls and ghosts stay safe and keep an eye out for the unknown. Thank you for tuning in to Chillers and Thrillers. I hope these spine-tingling tales of the paranormal have kept you on the edge of your seat. I invite you to join us again soon, and please, again, feel free to submit your own scary story or your theories to chillersandthrillers@gmail.com. Until then, stay curious, keep your eyes peeled for the unexplained, and never let the fear of the unknown deter you from embracing the extraordinary.